Today on our Tech for Business podcast, Kyle, our president and CEO, and Todd, our COO and CISO, are joining Kelsey, our graphic designer and brand strategist, and myself to celebrate our 100th episode. Can you believe that we've made it to 100 episodes?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Put some clapping over top of this later.
Yeah, it was cheering. Yes. There was cheering and celebrations. It was great. But today I have a few just kind of questions. I'm going to start off with, how did we get here? Maybe Kelsey is a good person to start with. How did the podcast come about? Where did this idea come from 100 episodes ago?
I feel like I could say this one really short with, it was Kyle.
I can expand on that. Yes,
right,
it was.
Getting from, hey, we're having these discussions. Could we do a podcast? And then me going to Tara and going, I don't know. Let's Google it and see what we can do. We meet on Teams. We have computers. We could probably do a podcast. Everybody's doing a podcast. So, that was kind of logistically. We were like, well, there's no reason not to. There's very little risk to just randomly doing a podcast. But Kyle, I'll let you actually speak to more of the inspirational reason behind it. Because I was like, yeah, we Googled it and it was possible.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's crazy what you think. I mean, you just, you listen to podcasts, you go through, it's like, I like listening to people just talk. It's kind of nice just, being part of overhearing the conversation on things. And I'm like, we talk a lot in the office and it'd be nice to have people to be able to, listen in on those conversations when we start talking about different topics. And that's where we went. Say, let's give it a shot. And it's just try to get the information out there and capture it.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Yeah. So I'll throw this to Todd, and I know Kyle will want to jump in. We talk a lot, or we use this podcast a lot as educational and kind of this connection. Is there a topic that is difficult to explain when you are talking IT or cybersecurity? Is there a topic that's difficult to explain or people to grasp?
Yes.
Yeah.
What is that topic? If you had to pick one, what would that be?
For cybersecurity, I think the hardest one that we did to date was the first time we took a pass at zero trust. We were trying to kind of explain it from the grassroots of going, okay, assuming you've never heard about it, and it is a rather complicated topic, and it's got a lot of layers to it. It's like an ogre. But it was probably the one that I thought was probably the most difficult. We've kind of circled back and broken it down into some smaller pieces, and it feels a lot easier to get my arms around how to explain it in our latest approach to it. However, we're talking about multiple podcasts versus here it is in one grand swoop, bam. So that was mine, I would say, by far was probably the hardest one to kind of go, how am I going? We're going to phrase this in 30 minutes.
Zero trust sticks with me too. I think that's just because it's the breadth of it so large, that's a very common one, but that's kind of the common theme. I think there's so many unique attributes to how people are using technology and the way that it's applies to different businesses sides of it. There's no one size fits all. So you can talk in very broad terms, but there's so many ways to apply it to civic organizations on how they want to use it and different levels of it. So, it just adds, you can go real deep and it can get very complex very quickly in a lot of topics, but yeah, the zero trust is a good nomination for the start.
Well, I think one of the other things that's really interesting is because we do have people on the podcast that have various levels of how much they embrace the technical explanation. So, for example, Nate is going to get much further into the weeds than I am. I'm usually going to stay pretty high level, but we don't always know what our audience is. And so to me, that approach works really, really well because we could have people that just want that really high level. And then there's going to be someone that's like, give me more. And so the 1-2 punch seems to work really well for us. But again, not always knowing who you're talking to makes it even more complicated. How are we going to balance this out and make sure it makes sense to everybody?
Yeah, that wide range of audience is a blessing and a curse a little bit. Is there a topic that you have enjoyed talking about the most? Like you really love, maybe it's Zero Trust, maybe you really love diving into that, or we have a lot of podcasts on MFA, or we have some on kind of the more business side and not so tech. Is there anything you have enjoyed talking about?
I feel like.
Well, I was waiting for Kyle. I mean, my comment is I love talking, so I kind of like a lot of them.
Yeah, that's kind of it. I've enjoyed all of them. I don't think there's like one that I think is better than the other. I guess, I mean, if I were to go back, it was fun to reminisce as we went through the origins side. When we kind of talked through those episodes, that was fun just because of your reminiscing and remembering, you know, where we started in the old times of it. So just from the fact that it was just fun to remember, you know, that was a really fun episode, couple episodes, I should say.
Yeah, I would be more specific, but I'm just a nerd. And the fact that we're talking about technology, I mean, we get done with it, I'm like, that was really good because I had a lot of fun.
Yeah. How about Kelsey? I know that you and I are maybe not as technical as the other two on this podcast. Has there been any topics or episodes that you really enjoyed?
Right. I feel like, you know, I hear I'm like, don't call me.
I know. as we keep trying to think.
Right? That I'm like, there's a lot of content, but to their point, being non-technical, I have like diving into right there. It was like the sim episode where it was like sim versus sim. Please don't say it that way or else you're wrong. And I was like, hey, I'll forever remember this. Even if I don't know how it works, I'm going to remember that. So that's been nice. And it's been nice to hear from a variety of different people. Yes. One of my highlights was hearing Todd call himself Uncle Todd. And I was like, this is sticking with me forever. You're Uncle Todd. Congratulations. Right. It's been nice to kind of have those little things that as a marketer, we're like, hey, it's exciting. And it's more than just the like technical explanation. It's how they flavor it on the side. But even hearing how both Kyle and Todd are excited about it is I'm like, you just made me understand something really technical that I probably don't care about. But all of a sudden now I know something about it because I sat through these episodes and I was like, this is a good thing, to be honest, because then, right, we get outside on the street and I say things to people outside of the company and they're like, what'd you just say to me? And I'm like, yeah, that's right. I know what MFA is. No big deal.
I love it. That's so great. Yeah. I like this wide breadth of like basics and the deep dives. It's definitely a crash course for me. Is there any, and maybe we're calling people out a little bit on this next question, but I'm curious as to, are there any industries that really struggle with IT adoption? And then maybe the flip side, is there anyone that are like powerhouses that you're like, they've always got their stuff together?
I feel like,
I mean, I don't think it's a fault of their own, but I think where we tend to see technology lagging a little bit tends to largely be in manufacturing. And it's mostly because of the manufacturing equipment itself, right? It's extremely expensive. It isn't terribly technical, so there aren't just a slew of updates coming on it regularly. And so you tend to see that type of equipment just tends to lag behind. And to your point, it isn't to call them out. It just kind of is what it is. That being said, you know, there's still ways to make sure that you do the right things. You get the updates as appropriate, you secure it and so forth. And then from my perspective, I would say the industry that I think is probably the furthest along is probably the finance industry, which kind of falls into SEC too. So if you've got a heavy regulation where the regulation has a lot of teeth to it, you're getting yearly or every 18 month audits, you're most likely going to have your stuff together because you really don't have an option. They're coming after you pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say healthcare or finance, you know, and again, regulated industries where we tend to see a large adoption. I would also nominate the schools. I think, you know, we do a lot of work with K-12s and so much of that being online and their adoption of technology into that education space, there's a lot of use of very advanced technology that keeps evolving into that space. You know, we've seen a lot of adoption there too.
I feel like.
I would concur with Todd. I think manufacturers, to Todd's point, is a good anchor where they're a little slower to adopt. you know, and it's, again, it's usually tied because of the dependencies on certain machines and the cost to upgrade the technology is cost prohibitive side of it. They also tend to, you know, their ability to, they don't have necessarily regulatory, although some do if they're doing in the government interaction side with it, but, you know, they tend to be concerned about cash flow and other sides of it, and the investment in technology needs to relate to producing the widget or whatever they're doing. And it, many times they're probably owned and the owner doesn't believe in it, you know? So it could be a little tougher sell for them to buy into that technology too.
Yeah. I mean, they also do have some competing priorities, right? So in your manufacturing, there's a lot of stuff that's going on, and most of them have safety first as kind of the mantra of where they're coming from, and for good reasons, right? There's a lot of people involved, and a lot of times there's other things that go on that make people first, and that's completely acceptable. And by that standard, yeah, focus on your people. Your people are your most important asset.
Yeah, for sure. We sometimes ask for like audience questions and stuff, and a lot of the questions were just, you know, what is coming next when it comes to, you know, cybersecurity? What is the next big threat, or what are trends, or what are tools that I need? So I just kind of wanted to open it up as to what can we kind of expect going forward this year. I feel like
I think zero trust to me is still a big one. I mean, I think that's still a large side. I think there's still a lot of, you know, a lot of movement to cloud and cloud, you know, cloud enablement within those environment sides of it. Seeing a lot of companies that are continuing to progress through that Active Directory, flip over to cloud Active Directory is high. Kelsey's chiming in AI, of course, that's,
yes.
You know, that's probably number one buzzword out there for sure. But yeah. Kelsey, you could talk too on that side.
But you can say things a lot with AI. Yeah, AI is, right, we're in marketing. It's all generative AI. It's all AI. Not that there's not AI use cases elsewhere, which now I'll stop talking to let Todd talk, because yes, that's where my brain goes.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think as far as tech goes, I'll kind of back up a little bit too, because I do think the visionary stuff was really fun too. So when we get to do the, hey, what do we think is going to happen at the beginning of 24? That's a good time too. You don't really know. You're kind of throwing a dart against the board. But I think AI is probably top of mind. We hear it a lot from our customers, and it's, to them, it's kind of a really heavy unknown at the moment. We've been working with it. We work with it internally and on several different areas, right? Where we're using Microsoft Copilot in our day-to-day kind of stuff, helping with propping up Word docs and summarizing team meetings. But we're also using it in marketing, as to Kelsey's point. So we use it quite a bit already. So I feel like we're pretty comfortable with what it is. And a lot of people are still going, help me understand, I'm not really sure what I'm getting into here. So by far, I would say that's the biggest thing that we're seeing this year. The other stuff that's still kind of coming around is, it's not so much that I see this big fancy tech coming as much as you're seeing a consolidation of tools. You're seeing a lot of stuff kind of pop up, and then companies start to bring them into a single umbrella and trying to get more of the market share. And that's probably no surprise. It's been happening for decades, but it is something that you're seeing a big, heavy focus on in 24. So those would be the big ones. I agree with Kyle on this zero trust. I guess I mentioned this in one of our podcasts. I think we're kind of at a tipping point where you're starting to go, what does technology look like now going into the future? And zero trust really is kind of the foundation for that, regardless of what you tend to be. Most organizations now have a mixed format of what their technology is. Some is on-prem, some is in the cloud, some is in the data center, but the zero trust approach works for all of them. And it's a more modern approach to what the infrastructure should look like, as well as what the protection of that is as well. But you should be looked at as a single entity. It's not, I got IT and then I got security. It's all the same thing.
You're saying that all of this is connected, that if I clean up my data for training an AI model, that it has to do with security too? What?
It's true. True story.
Yeah. And we went to a webinar about AI, and they kind of said, you know, if you're not looking at it, if you're not starting it, you're going to be behind, like, you know, and it depends on the industry. It depends on what you do, but this marketing, especially, kind of get that started and moving.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, we've had a couple meetings on it. I think we've done a couple podcasts too. And I mean, quite frankly, I feel like it's already been part of our DNA at CIT already. It's so quickly adopted and just makes your day so much easier in so many ways. That's really remarkable.
Yeah. It's kind of like finding that extra French fry at the bottom of the bag, right? I mean, you keep remember, you see it, you're like, oh yeah, I ran this, and then it gives you, you know, all those quick results. You're like, oh, that was awesome. You know, it's like kind of it's always fun to kind of, you know, oh, there's that co-pilot, let me try that again, you know. So and then it kicks out, you're like, wow, that was super fast. All right. So keep discovering all these things for it, but it's very, very helpful. And that's what I think, you know, I keep expressing to customers when we talk to them about it is you need to start, you know, experimenting with it, because it is amazing how much it can improve your workflows through those sides. And I don't think those stats where they say 40% productivity improvement is an exaggeration. I think you, when you have that rolled out, it very easily can pick up, you know, minutes throughout the days, but those minutes become days and weeks of productivity over the course of the year. And you cross the orgs, those are big numbers of help and just making things, you know, produce so much faster. And they look so dang good. I mean, that's the quality is so much better than what you naturally produce. You're like, wow, that's pretty awesome. Pretty awesome.
Yeah, I was going to say, we're going to have to start tracking, because I'm like, I can't imagine before the marketing team started using it. I'm like, we didn't track that very closely. And right, a lot of it was training the model, right? We hear about all the time, people are like, well, the AI spits out, I got to fix it. And you're like, yes, but if you fix the data first and train it to sound how you want it to sound, then that's where you really start seeing all these super cool things happening. And that, right, it's kind of my favorite analogy is it's your favorite unpaid intern. They're super motivated. They'll do whatever you want them to do, but they only know whatever you tell them. So if you don't tell them, they don't know, and they may just make stuff up to make you happy. And I'm like, it's a good reminder that if I didn't tell AI that, it probably doesn't know, and it's just going to make something up to make me happy, which is then where I go over to Todd and go, is this correct?
Oh yeah, that human element is so important still.
Yeah.
I was going to say, with all of these, you know, we're getting on a little AI tangent, which is great because that's what's coming, but there were so many tools, there's so many different programs out there. It's kind of overwhelming. How do you start? How do you choose the right thing? And that could be anything. That could be a cybersecurity tool. How do you pick the right thing for your business?
Listen to the CIT podcast.
Just shameless plug.
Well, it's Uncle Todd.
100%.
Yeah.
For what it's worth, we look at a lot of different things. I mean, because we're in the industry, just a lot of the stuff that we do day in and day out, there's probably no surprise when it comes to social media, your search history does this too. As you do with that, a lot of the stuff that comes across my newsfeed just tends to be very tech centric, and it's very cutting edge kind of stuff. So I get a lot of stuff just up front, and then we start to do an investigation. Is this a fit? What does it look like? Do I need to investigate this further? So the way that I work tends to be, I see something and it piques my interest and I start to dig into it. And then when I start to dig into it, I start to go to sources, the things that I trust. You know, there's things out there. Being in cybersecurity, this is a little bit of a shameless plug, and I probably don't need to do it. But as an example, Aynes would be a great place where I would start. It's not pay to play. They give you a lot of insights on security tool sets, et cetera. So that would be an example of places where I'd go to start to get additional input. But what we do more often than not tends to be very heavily of, show me the tool, let's get an idea of what it does, how it works. And ultimately what we're trying to drive to is, if we like it enough, then we'll get a demo in place and we'll start getting our hands on it, which is getting back to Kyle's point. Once you get your hands on it, you really start to understand what you got. And we don't just go, wow, this one tool is really, really cool. We start going, this was cool, this seems to be a fit. What are others we should be looking at just to make sure we got the right thing in place?
Yeah, and you discover a lot of them through networking and the different industry events and show aside, there's certain criteria we look for, just again, as Todd mentioned, because we support multiple companies as part of our, you know, go-to-market side with it. We look for certain checkbox features that allows for efficiencies of scale for support. And besides, because so much of what we do is we're fractionalizing services and time of resources and access to experts that support those tools. So, you know, it needs to have a certain model fit for us to go to market with it. But in many cases, we look for those addresses a need that is a gap in, whether it's cybersecurity or it's productivity or whatever it may be, and then allow us to say, can we bring this to our customer base that's going to help them, it'll provide value to them, and will then scale. And if it fits a lot of those check boxes, then we usually bring it to our market and say, we'll do it. And Todd's point, CIT is usually customer one. I mean, if we see value in it, more than likely our customers will. And that generally holds very true to
them. Just kind of expanding on that a little bit is our customers tend to say, hey, I've got X problem, or there's things that I'm struggling to figure out. And that does drive our basic thought process of, well, how would we solve that? So when Kyle kind of mentioned there's certain things about our industry that we look for, we are trying to solve business problems. And that's how most people do it, right? I've got this business problem. How am I going to use technology to address it? Very, very similar. We just have a little bit of a broader approach just because we talk to so many different industries, so many different people. So the networking aspect as well, it helps us out a little bit. And then, of course, it doesn't hurt that we're just absolutely IT junkies.
Sometimes customers come forward with great ideas too. You know, we hear
absolutely
a customer says, hey, I've been using this product for a while. I really like it. Is this something you guys could help me support or go through those things? And we'll take that feedback. If they're happy with it, then again, we'll investigate based on that. And we've brought on products, by a proxy from, the customers had good success with. So, we're not always the one that's bringing it to them. That sometimes it happens that way too. So just keep an open mind and open ear. And to Todd's point, align it to what we know we're hearing as far as business needs to address and try to solve and connect those dots. Great.
And see what gets acquired. I feel like that's at least
what's coming across. Acquired,
that's what I say across my feed every day is, right? Like Alphabet's trying to buy HubSpot now is the big thing today. Not to date this podcast by date, but which spoilers, we do not use HubSpot. Well, we did look at it as a marketing team, but we ultimately went with different tech stack, but made me think of all that I was like, yeah, I feel like that's the other thing that we hear is people going, well, are we going to use this tool? Are we going to use this EDR that's part of now three different solutions, but it wasn't there when we put it in. So I can't imagine both of you vetting all of that fun out.
Yeah, I mean, we do reevaluate solutions. Obviously, you kind of have to from time to time decide what worked 3, 4, 5 years ago may not still be the best overall solution, depending on where the market's going and what that particular vendor is doing. Like I said, they may not even be the same vendor or the same group that, checked the boxes for us when we originally started. So we may have to pivot out of there. It's, nobody's got to get out of card on that stuff. It's just part of the world we're in. I mean, technology is one of the things I like so much about it. And it's just something you have to work through it's continuously changing. And its lifespan is not long typically. It's a very short, it's about half a dog year, it's 3 years is, seems to be a good lifespan for some of these things. And every 3 years, things are starting to pivot in some other direction. And it's hard for a lot of traditional organizations to get their head around when they're saying, well, I'm amortizing this for 5 to 7 or 10 years. It's like, well, 10 years is probably completely unrealistic, and 5 is typically as long as you're going to go with technology side, because something else is going to be completely different. So it does take a different mindset. But that, that's been, I think, a lot of the attractiveness of the cloud solution side is it has been that solution for, the forklift upgrades every 5 years is very, painful for many organizations, and it's costly, and it's disruptive. And the other side, where if you move to platform service now, the platform's continuously evolving. You don't have these large impactful moments every, you know, X number of years. So
now you just have Teams changing its look every 30 days. This is
yeah. Or Outlook having an update every other day, you know, and I mean, it's everything's just continuously, it's on a continuous upgrade. It is never, you know, versions are almost becoming obsolete. It's just, you got the platform and it's just continuously changing. I mean, we don't really talk about, say, an Outlook version that much anymore. I mean, it's Outlook 365 and it's continuously changing. Now they went from old Outlook to new Outlook. They didn't put a version on it. It's just like, it's old and new. It's like, okay, you know, but it's same with Teams, but it, you know, they're dropping the versions and everything else. But, you know, personally, I like it. I know it's not for everybody, but I'd much rather have it that way. I think it's easier to progress by, you know, put us in a boiling pot, you know, slowly turn it up versus the dropping out water, so to speak. You can learn as you go, you know, so it's smaller incremental feature changes. It's not the full scale upgrade. I think it introduces a lot less complexities and problems for people long term.
I feel like end out our podcast today, and I'll open it up to any other comments. My question is, how has the view of IT or IT professionals changed since when you started in this business? So how many years is that, you know?
It's been a bit. Yeah, it's kind of funny. When Kyle was talking, I was contemplating whether I was going to jump in on this, but he had kind of gone from one extreme to the other. We kind of talked about the origins of the business and in one of our podcasts, and to the new technologies and how things are adapting so quickly. And it reminded me when I went back and I listened to the origin story, because I wasn't on that one. So I had to go back and listen like the rest of our public does. And it was so nostalgic for me. And I was like, God, if I look back at it, I just remember how this stuff just barely worked. I mean, technology. So one of the first jobs that I had out of college, I was working on making sound cards for PCs. And when I was doing that, the way that the technology worked was, in order to make add-on devices work, you had to do a variety of things. And this will, I'm sorry, this will probably age me pretty quickly and most people won't know what this is, but you had to work through various ways of doing interrupts and DMA changes and whatnot. And the way that we addressed it was, you would have to crack open the PC and you'd put the device in, you test it. If it didn't work, you would turn off the PC and you'd go in and you'd take a jumper from one pin to another and say, did that work? So you were changing the IRQs manually with a piece of equipment on the circuit board itself. And then the evolution became, you could do that through software, and the world has just so dramatically changed since then. So when I make the comment of the way IT was, I thought it was great. It was the coolest stuff I ever did. I was doing stuff that I never anticipated doing. I remember when I was a young kid playing Oregon Trail going, this is cool. Things have changed so much since then. But compared to years ago, it's just been absolutely dramatic, and playing with tools like AI and even AI. I mean, the learning models has advanced so much over just the last 6 months. It's dramatic. I mean, you guys even mentioned that too, of you had to go back and kind of clean up a whole bunch of stuff. And now I'm like, most of this is pretty usable. And then you start to get into advances of putting your own voice into it, and it could just goes up like a rocket. So it's been amazing. It's remarkable to me how much has dramatically changed over the last couple of decades.
Yeah, it's great. Like that, I mean, if we go so far back to the how much manual side you have to do with these old computers. I mean, I remember when we first started, and this was, I'm really dating myself, we had to educate customers on what networking computers was. You know, so it was the connectivity of the computers to one another was a new concept when we first started. And this was, you know, almost a decade earlier to where the internet started even go more mainstream. And then we entered the periods of explaining what the internet was and what email was and having customers come back to and say, why do I need to email? I can just pick up the phone and call the person. Why do I need this email stuff? You know, and I mean, I remember going through those debates, you know, which is, you know, kind of correlates to the AI discussions today side with it. But it's, you know, it's just been, you know, such a fun ride to transition through those things of what was, you know, a stack of floppy disks this big to kind of install that took, you know, hours to go through that we'd optimize that we go through that, you know, was done in a few clicks. And just the sheer size of the capacities of the systems we work on in relative form of, you know, going back a couple, you know, a few decades back of how much exponentially that's increased, where, you know, Todd was chatting with me the other day saying, you know, we upgraded our standard to 32 gig because 16 gig just ain't cutting it anymore. You know, I mean, that's, you know, you think in size wise of what's kind of becoming the norm side with it, which is just crazy, you know.
For context on that, when I was working at that sound card manufacturers, we needed hard drives that were at least 500 megs. And now I've got 32 gigs on a DIM.
Oh man.
It's just crazy. And so much of it now too is where, again, you know, you don't even have floppy drives or even, you know, any external media or CD-ROMs or DVD-ROMs anymore, and stuff very rarely anyway. And, you know, everything's just electronically, digitally, you know, exchanged and downloaded in a very, very short period of time, typically, you know, over the internet side for the delivery. We just talked about how fast these applications are continuously updating themselves and evolving to go through and you know, even the browser. I mean, I remember working on the early Netscape and side of it when that first came out, when the early internet side of it and how clunky it was and those things. And that was, you compare that to what we have with the Chrome and the modern browsers today and the power of the applications in these browsers that just are continuously upgraded. It's amazing. It's just exciting because there's so much to do, you know, how much you can do at your fingertips with it. I think it's done. I love it.
Yeah.
Which for all of our Gen Z listeners, yeah, I feel like being like, floppy disks are your save icon. That's what it looks like.
I've seen that meme. And I've also seen the meme where it shows all the old cell phones and stuff in a museum. And it says, you know, you're old and it's in a museum. I'm like, yeah, there's a lot of my other life, childhood stuff that's in the older museum yet.
Yeah. Right. Well, you talk about even like CD-ROMs, right? I'm like, my laptop in college was when the Macs, right, took away the CD port. And people were like, that's a ridiculous idea. Why would you take that away? And now I'm like, I had to like look in the center. I'm like, nope, I don't have one. Cool. Yep. I had to check for that. Don't know where my CDs are.
Yeah. I do still have a USB CD-ROM DVD just in case. So I have one.
That's important.
You never know.
That's because we're old time. We hang on to these things, you know, like the old floor mats for a car you don't have anymore. I mean, you just kind of hang on to this stuff. And
hey, you never know when it's going to be put in a museum. Could be worth something someday.
That's the point where, yeah, it becomes vintage. And now, you know, you move from junk to valuable piece of tech, you know. So okay. I still have my first old iPod that came out. And I still have my first iPod, the rotary dial one, and those things when they first released it, that's like this thick and
heavy as a brick. Yeah,
heavy as a brick inside on it, but you know, and I have a box of Nobel and I have some old DOS and everything else on it. But
I feel like we'll make our own museum at CIT. We'll just have like a little display.
We talked about it.
That would be pretty funny. That would be pretty cool. Yeah.
We'll do a timelines. We'll say, you know, you're old when, and we'll do it each year. That will kind of be it. And that's how you'll know when you're now an elder employee is when your childhood is in the display case. And you're like, yep, this happened.
It happened. I flipped over today.
Yep.
Wow. I love it.
We were all slept in tech. I think we're over 3/4 of our company wasn't even born or was in preschool or elementary school at least. So
Yeah. I was going to say, somebody listened back to one of these podcast episodes. One of the icebreakers is like, what was your childhood comfort movie? Mm-hmm. And one of our security team members said Avatar, like the blue James Cameron Avatar. And I was like, I'm so old.
Yeah, that was not a childhood movie. Like,
yeah, look at that. Wasn't that out last year?
Yeah. Like, oh, dang. So. Yeah.
Oh gosh. Yeah. I love it. Well, thank you so much, Kyle, Todd, and Kelsey, yeah, for joining us. And all our listeners who've been with us for the past 100 episodes. Hopefully we'll have 100 more. So that is exciting. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss out on upcoming episodes. And we'd love to hear from you. Please reach out to us at info@cit-net.com or head out to our website, cit-net.com/podcast. And we'll be back next week with an all new episode.
Thanks, everyone.